This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is a constitutional attorney, popular speaker, and the author of 20 books, including the book Feminist Fantasies, that reveals the feminist influence on the media, on college campuses, and writing in children's classrooms. Now here's the president of Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly.
A second grader who pointed a pencil and made shouting noises in a Suffolk, Virginia elementary school is the latest to be suspended in zero-tolerance gun incidents. Although the teacher wrote on the suspension notice, "I told him to stop, and he did," she nevertheless reported the incident to the next level, and the principal suspended the 7-year-old and his fellow pencil-wielding classmate for 2 days. A school representative said, "A pencil is a weapon when it is pointed at someone in a threatening way and gun noises are made." Despite community outrage at this silly reaction by the school, school administrators continue to defend their actions. The father of the suspended boy is a Marine Corps veteran. He said his son is a good student and never had any discipline problems. His son told him, "Well, I was pretending to be a Marine and the other guy was being a bad guy." In other zero-tolerance nonsense, some educators around the country are being scared by plastic Hello Kitty bubble guns, Pop-Tarts bitten into something like the shape of a gun, and toy World War II soldiers on top of cupcakes. Some parents say that zero-tolerance policies, enforced without common sense, make a mockery of the real issue of school safety. Stripping little boys of their masculine tendency to engage in military play is harmful, not helpful. When school administrators take zero tolerance to these extremes, they become fear-mongering strangers to common sense, rather than responsible adults looking out for the safety of all students. And it's not just boys who are the victims of zero-tolerance silliness. In a California school, an 11-year-old girl was suspended for doing cartwheels and handstands during lunchtime.
Has your son or daughter expressed frustration with the liberal ideology and anti-Christian propaganda on their college campus? Encourage any students you know to join Phyllis Schlafly and other conservative leaders in Washington, D.C. on July 18 and 19 for the annual Eagle Forum Collegian Summit. The conference is free to students who register in advance at eagleforum.org. That's eagleforum.org. And join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack, for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Why do over 50% of North Americans suffer from some form of chronic ailment? Could it be due to a toxic overload? It's time to take back your life. Get the lead out, as well as the cadmium, mercury, and calcium. Extendovite is a garlic cayenne supplement with five other herbs that acts like a natural Drano, cleaning out the stored toxins, restoring your energy and youthfulness that we've lost. If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, or fear, then Extendovite is for you. Available in either capsules or liquid, you too can see why Extendovite is the number one heart drop available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
John Stettmiller here. Gives me great pleasure to welcome our new sponsor, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. They are a veteran-owned, Christian-based preparedness company. I know the owner, and I can tell you they share the same ideals and values that we do. From quality long-term food to self-defense and camping supplies, they have what you need to prepare. Great wholesale pricing, quality products, the best customer service. You just can't go wrong. One example, they have a one-year food package that includes GMO-free vegetables and fruit, plus real meat like roast beef and chicken breast. Over 2,000 calories a day for $19.95. Not your run-of-the-mill carb bucket like a lot of them out there. From stun guns, batons, tents, gas masks, chemical suits, the list goes on and on. One thing you'll learn over time is value is defined by quality plus price. You get that value with AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Tell them that John sent you and receive a free knife with your order today.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Rodney Martin. His website is wvfoundations.org. All righty. So what were we talking about?
Well, we were finishing up the geopolitical term, but you brought up Churchill. And you had that, and I want to really comment on that real briefly before we move into, because August becomes a very decisive. August 1938 becomes is a decisive month. In some cases, August is more critical to study, because there we learn, you know, exactly all the events that were taking place. But Churchill, you had this situation where clearly the British government under Chamberlain and Halifax, now they have been painted as appeasers and weak because they had to do that to keep up with their anti-national socialist narrative. But Chamberlain had made several comments, and I'm going to paraphrase, is, you know, why in the world are we going to fight, meaning Britain and France? He'd made this comment to the French prime minister, another war, he'd remembered the first war vividly. Why are we going to fight another one on faraway issues in which, you know, issues that really we have no business, no strategic interest in? And he was specifically meaning Austria, Czechoslovakia, and Danzig. Chamberlain wrote time and again and made statements time and again before he was, you know, somehow manipulated. I don't know if manipulation is a good word or not, into this guarantee over Poland. He fully understood the concept of self-determination. These German regions should have been returned to Germany, and he had instructed these nations to negotiate accordingly. And Churchill, it's important to put him into historical perspective. Churchill is a result of the Jewish media taking a nasty piece of something out of the cat box. I've been using that as an analogy, polishing it up and telling people that it is a diamond when it is not. Churchill was horribly discredited. He was responsible for the massacre of British and Australian troops at Gallipoli. He always had this fetish of this, you know, the soft underbelly, the Balkans, and all of this. And he was completely discredited. He was actually financially broke as well. And a group of Jews came to, and it's a historical fact, came to Churchill, and they paid him a monthly stipend, and all he had to do was do two things. Go on the floor of Parliament and just rail against Germany and against Chamberlain's government. And two, write art newspaper articles. And in return, Churchill was paid a stipend by a group of, quote, Jewish businessmen. The timing is absolutely, it's interesting to look. Churchill began his anti-German crusade at the same time he went on the payroll of this group of Jewish benefactors.
Right, and before that, he said some very beneficial things, some very positive things about Germany. And then
Absolutely.
All of a sudden, he just turned the corner immediately.
And hence, during this time, when you see him transitioning, he's making the statements that there is going to be a war with Germany because of their trade and economic policies. And remember, Deanna, we did a show in which I suggested that World War II was more about the National Socialist economic model, you know, being a threat to Judeo-capitalism and Judeo-communism than it was. Nobody cared about Germany's racial policies, because all of these countries that so-called, you know, championed, you know, was so appalled at Germany's racial policies, their racial policies were horrific. absolutely horrific. They were hypocrites. Churchill was the biggest racist, prejudiced person that there ever was. And so it had nothing to do with human rights. It had nothing to do with so-called Holocaust, which nobody ever talked about until the 1970s. It all had to do with this economic modeling and the fact that Churchill became basically a front man for the World Jewish Congress. And he also seized upon it for himself to, one, get some cash in his pocket, and to, two, he needed some platform to rehabilitate his and justifiably so, tarnished reputation from his antics in the First War, the massacre at Gallipoli. That was his fault. So that puts Churchill in perspective. He absolutely changed his position from being, you know, kind of pro-German. He had made trips to Germany and such, and he talked very glowingly. He changed his position 180 degrees when he was given the money in the brown paper bag by the people with funny noses.
Exactly.
But
we do have a check question from an email.
Yes.
Joe. This is from Joe. He said the Czech T-35 and T-38 tanks were made at the Škoda factory. They made up about a third of the German armed forces in the Polish and French campaign and Operation Barbarossa. By then, they were already obsolete. The standard story is that Germany appropriated the factory when they took over Czechoslovakia. True? Or did they legally purchase them along with other Czech material?
Well, I, when you talk about legally purchased, when the German war started, actually Czechoslovakia actually contributed heavily to the German war effort. Now, remember, as a protectorate, when you talk about seized, title transfer, I mean, how do you think Walt Disney felt when, you know, the U.S. Army showed up at his factory, at his production facility and said, you are now going to make anti-German and anti-Japanese cartoons? The same thing happened in the United States. And I'm using that as an example. All of a sudden, you know, factories were essentially appropriated for war production. He's absolutely correct in the tanks. Czech tanks were used in the Polish campaign. That's true. I don't believe there was a significant volume of Czech tanks used by Barbarossa because of they were just operationally defective. But there certainly was a significant number of Czech material. Czechs contributed tremendously, and this is where we're going into why I was going to try to get to this towards the end of the show. Why they actually assassinated Heydrich, and why there was this imported, and I want to stress imported, communist opposition and resistance movement. It was not on the part of the everyday Czechs that lived there. And let me get to that, and I'll lay the foundation as we talk about August 1938. It became clear. Beneš was completely, much like United States politicians, he was pursuing an agenda that was contrary to the thinking of his countrymen. His countrymen did not want to. The intelligentsia people did not want to be used as a chess pawn to provoke some war, some sort of war with Germany by Britain and France. At the same time, Britain had already been telling their ambassador in Prague to tell Beneš he had to negotiate. There's a common fable, an absolute bold-faced lie, that the Germans wanted, absolutely, they just wanted a war over Czechoslovakia. There's a diplomatic cable, and this event happened at 1:30 in the morning in early August, in which the German chargé d'affaires, basically equivalent to the ambassador in Prague, had woke Ribbentrop up at 1 in the morning to ask guidance, because by this time Beneš was getting significant opposition from the Germans in the Sudetenland. Munich conference hadn't happened yet. He was getting significant opposition from his own people and within various political structure. They did not. The average Czech abhorred Bolshevism, abhorred communism. And so you had Beneš doing this same little tiptoe dance in 38 that the Poles ended up doing in 39, trying to play between the West, i.e. Britain and France, and obviously the Soviet Union. And of course, we know that the Soviet Union was more entrenched. They, you know, the communist opposition in Czechoslovakia was wholly supported by the Soviets, and that became the de facto government in 1945. But so Benesch, at one point, he has a meeting with the German Sudeten, the German Sudetens who were Sudeten Germans who were advocating return to Germany. He called them to his office in August. And essentially, that's where the bully meeting took place. He threw a piece of paper down and basically told them to memorialize in writing their treason, you know, their desire to leave the Czech nation.
Wow. All righty, we are going to a 3-minute break. We will be right back.
Herbal Healer Spring Sale. 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes. COQ10 with hawthorn, glucosamine chondroitin, sea cucumber, colloidal minerals, Superfam and Super Male Plex, colon enhancer, our top-selling liquid, Cal Mag Vitamin D, MSM Sulfur Capsules, and Elderberry Power Capsules. We also offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Free memberships and free online newsletters also available at herbalhealer.com. Herbal Healer has been serving the natural medicine industry for 25 years. This is a company you can count on. Visit herbalhealer.com today. Herbalhealer.com. That's herbalhealer.com.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Theravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Theravim? Simple. Theravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to theravim.com. That's theravim.com. Theravim, the best supplements on earth.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and, in some instances, your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Rodney Martin. His website is wvfoundations.org.
Now, let me make a final comment on the ScotaWorks question. The difference, the real only real difference with the ScotaWorks, you know, before the protectorate was established and after, is the ScotaWorks began to produce German equipment. And German armaments. It was still staffed by Czech workers. there really wasn't a significant change. You know, every nation, you know, every nation's at war will quasi-nationalize manufacturing facilities for the purposes of armaments, and of course, in the case of Škoda Works, that was their specialty. Their existing production, stuff that they had in verse, was actually integrated into the Wehrmacht. And actually, let's go a step further. I might as well jump to this right now. September, I'm going to jump around a little bit, but this is important. In September the of 38, the Sudetenland becomes part of Germany. Even after the Sudetenland was gone, about 25% of the Czech military, Czechoslovakian military, was German. That gives you an idea of how many Germans were actually in Bohemia and Moravia. 25% of the Czech army was German. Combined till then, there was actually ethnic Hungarians and Slovaks. And keep in mind, Slovak, as part of what the German proposal was, that Czechoslovakia would be split, Slovakia would receive independence, self-determination, which Slovakia wanted. They never wanted to be linked to Czechoslovakia. We've seen how long they lasted after the fall of the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. What was it? 18 months at most before Czechoslovakia split up back into the original situation. So, but gives you an idea. About 25% of the Czech army after Munich, after Sudetenland is gone, is German or ethnic Germans, and that has gone unnoticed in history. So we get to I covered before the break the meeting in early August where Benesch, he had been told by the British to negotiate to work this out in accordance with Chamberlain and Halifax policies. You know, they clearly did not want a Soviet influence in Czechoslovakia. The Czech people were, you know, he was getting political pressure from within his own political establishment and from the Czech populace, because they were certainly fearful of Soviet influence and Bolshevism. There was a tremendous anti-Bolshevik way feeling in Europe at this time. They were looking at, you know, people, you know, what had gone on in the Ukraine in 1936 and 1937. People knew about that, and they talked about it in Europe, what Stalin had done to the Ukrainians. People knew what Stalin really was. And so it wasn't, you know, and then they looked at the tremendous success in Germany and says, you know what, this you know, the propaganda about the Germans isn't correct. You know, they should be talking about Stalin, which they never did. He was their beast. So you have that going on. Also, at the same time, you had Romania becoming a fascist. The new government of Romania went fascist in 1938. So you had this tremendous wave. So Benesch, in early August, tries to basically bully the ethnic Germans into writing out. He threw this piece of paper across the desk. And one of two of the persons in that meeting lived post-war and was able to relate, you know, how, you know, Benesch was irrational and, you know, demanded that they write their treason down on a piece of paper, you know, and, of course they knew what he had in mind. They just basically left the meeting. They just went back to the Sudetenland, because by that time the British were making public statements of a willingness to negotiate. And of course, Italy had actually formalized its relationship with Germany. It was firmly on the German side as well. Benesch began making a series of proposals. And now you want to know where the foundation, where the thought of a protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia came from. You can make the argument that President Benesch first made the put the idea on the table. On August 24th, and this is memorialized through some Czechoslovakian documents and David Faber, the Faber book, Munich 1938, he covered it. But it's well known. I think some copies of it's referred to in the German White Book, which we're going to briefly cover as well. That book just got caused some trouble in Slovakia. Benesch submitted proposals, and his specific language, his specific proposal was to cede the Sudetenland, and then it was actually very far-reaching. Bohemia and Moravia would be divided into autonomous Gaus. He basically, instead of basically Bohemia and Moravia as a single Reich protectorate, Benesch proposed to go ahead and cut it up into distinct Gauls, according to German population and let the Germans take the Gauls that were heavily German in Bohemia and Moravia. So the first concept of basically, you know, as you have these court historians say, the rape of Czechoslovakia or the violation of their sovereignty or whatever, the first hand that reached out of Czechoslovakia to the Germans saying, okay, we do want a German presence here in Czechoslovakia, was none other than Beneš, proposing to divide Bohemia and Moravia into independent Gauls. He was going to dissolve the Czech portion of the Czechoslovakian Union. Sure. That's exactly. Now, people don't talk about that. They talk about, you know, the Germans just walked in and invaded and such. But Beneš, by late August, he was facing the fact that he was the odd man out, that he had been played politically. He was trying to court the Soviets. The Soviets was not going to come in and get involved at that point. And he submitted this, and it was rejected. It was rejected because he modified it, and he wanted to basically still have this some sort of loose confederation as well, and he also was negotiating that formal alliance with the Soviet Union. Then you have Munich. The Sudeten Germans just absolutely, as I'd indicated, you know, 17-18% of them by ratio of the population was members of the National Socialist Party. They were very much nationalist Germans. They put the pressure on to become part of Germany. You also had a repeated incident of what you would see in Poland. You had these who would become eventually the Czech resistance groups. They were far left socialist and communist movements began to attack ethnic Germans. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of for Hitler. When his people began to be molested, attacked, beaten, and murdered inside the Sudetenland, he made a very powerful speech at the Nuremberg party rally. And that woke Chamberlain up, and that's where eventually Chamberlain went to Gotisburg, the first trip to Gotisburg, to try to broker a deal. Now, what's not recorded by a lot of court historians is there is an official German diplomatic cable where Hitler was offered to go to London to work this out. Now, if Germans really wanted war over Czechoslovakia, as Richard Evans and some of these other court historians say, then that doesn't mesh with the original documents, which are available in the German White Book, which I think, Dana, you have on your site, I have on mine, which is now beginning to go viral because it was just published in Slovakia, and they pulled it because it just doesn't go with the narrative. But you have Ribbentrop telling the Chargé d'Affaires at 1 o'clock in the morning in early August, no, we want to negotiate this to the fullest extent possible. You have Hitler offering to go to London. The only caveat was the Germans wanted some assurances that the German diplomatic delegation, which would include Hitler, wouldn't put on an organized spectacle, i.e. the British wouldn't allow the World Jewish Congress to come in and picket and disrupt the festivities. That is true. There was a concern about that. And the result was Chamberlain, for the first time in his old 70-year-old life, got in an airplane and flew to Gotisburg. And in the meeting, he agreed with everything that Hitler and the German delegation said. Let me rephrase that. The British delegation, which included Chamberlain and the British Foreign Office representatives, agreed that the Sudetenland should move immediately to Germany. And as a matter of fact, Beneš was actually trying to do some sort of plebiscite, much like Schuschnigg did, to stall for time. And the French even objected and said, no, this is 90% German. There should be no plebiscite. It should be annexed immediately.
Right.
So they agreed to it. So the Sudetenland goes home.
All righty. We are going to break, and we'll be right back.
Flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, the government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper. Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Ceramic body armor is rated to stop six hits. But what about the seventh? Unlike ceramic or Kevlar, Infidel body armor is proven to take hit after hit, and it just won't quit. Reasonably priced and designed for the smart civilian prepper, Infidel stops hundreds of hits from small arms to high-powered rifles. That means safety and peace of mind. Buy yours at InfidelBodyArmor.com. Spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L BodyArmor.com. Infidel body armor just won't quit. The government's Department of Homeland Security is buying up loads of ammo. At the same time, they're restricting civilians' rights to own and purchase firearms. Can you put two and two together? Infidel body armor can stop every round, including hollow points and 308 sniper rounds, is reasonably priced and fully legal. But for how long? Go to InfidelBodyArmor.com, spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L BodyArmor.com. Infidel body armor just won't quit.
If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself from anything out of bounds concerning cardiovascular or diabetic circulation problems, then this might be the most important ad you'll ever hear. It is possible to acquire a 100% organic nutritional supplement for a healthy heart and circulation, which works. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. For a long and healthy life, order today by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Order online at heartandbody.com. That's heartandbody.com.
John Stettmiller here. Gives me great pleasure to welcome our new sponsor, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. They are a veteran-owned, Christian-based preparedness company. I know the owner, and I can tell you they share the same ideals and values that we do. From quality long-term food to self-defense and camping supplies, they have what you need to prepare. Great wholesale pricing, quality products, the best customer service. You just can't go wrong. One example, they have a one-year food package that includes GMO-free vegetables and fruits, plus real meat like roast beef and chicken breast. Over 2,000 calories a day for $19.95. Not your run-of-the-mill carb bucket like a lot of them out there. From stun guns, batons, tents, gas masks, chemical suits, the list goes on and on. One thing you'll learn over time is value is defined by quality plus price. You get that value with AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Tell them that John sent you and receive a free knife with your order today.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Rodney Martin. And his website is vwfoundations.org.
Well, we got about 30 minutes, Deanna, so I'm going to just basically kind of consolidate as far as the establishment of the protectorate. We covered at Munich, you have Sudetenland going back to Germany unanimously by international treaty. As a matter of fact, Benesch had become such a fool and buffoon in the eyes of the British and the French, he wasn't even in part of the conference. It was basically Germany, France, Britain, and Italy on the deal. They did not even let Benesch into the conference. And the court historians and some of the narrators and documents say, oh, and the Czechs had no say in their own self-determination. Well, that's not entirely accurate. The Czech people, Benesch was getting tremendous political pressure. They did not want to be any. They did definitely did not want to be a Soviet pawn. And of course, there were a significant amount of the population in Czechoslovakia proper, in the Czech regions, Bohemia and Moravia, were German. Even after the transfer of the Sudetenland, Benes became thoroughly discredited.
Benes was at Versailles. He was part of that group, so he was in.
The leftists dominated Versailles. They dominated Versailles. As a matter of fact, there's another little guy from Vietnam at Versailles as well,
right,
advocating for his country, named Ho Chi Minh. But still, regardless, Czechoslovakia was artificially created.
Absolutely.
Basically, I mean, the whole idea of breaking the Austro-Hungarian Empire up because they forced ethnic peoples together, but that's what they did with Czechoslovakia for the sole purpose of having this sword up into the heart of Germany. Well, what did Benes do immediately after? I mean, he wasn't even part of the Munich Conference. He was thoroughly discredited abroad and at home. He was not looked favorably upon. You can go back and look at the media, the international press at the time. Benes leaves Czechoslovakia, Deanna. He resigns from office in late 38, and where did he go? To the United States. He went to Chicago.
Chicago?
He went to Chicago first, and then he ended up back in London, you know, after war was declared. But he came to the United States first. And but you know, he resigned from office. He was discredited. He had no support. And at that point, President Hacha succeeded him. And it was basically a joint agreement by a broad spectrum of the political parties and influences in Czechoslovakia, the remaining parts of Czechoslovakia, which was Slovakia, Bohemia, and Moravia. There hadn't been a split yet, and. So you have, Hacha takes over, you know, he's he has to administer the transfer of the Sudetenland to Germany, which was ordered, you know, almost immediately. And again, you still have the Benes communists. The Communist Party was very active and very violent and very brutish in Czechoslovakia, engaging in a bunch of intrigue. And then, of course, you know, they immediately began advocating, you know, for Soviets, for, you know, for to get Uncle Joe and to get Uncle Joe involved. Because in their mind, the communists were making the case that they've been sold out by the West. The Communist Party, though, was not reflective of the broader populace of Czechoslovakia. They definitely weren't reflective of Slovakia. And you had this tremendous German population still in Bohemia and Moravia, the remaining Czech portions. And so they resorted to their same, you know, terror tactics and propaganda and agitation. There was a meeting in early 1939 between Hacha and Hitler at the Berghof. We talked about that earlier. And at that point, bear in mind, go back to August of 38, Benes had already put on the table, Benes had the Czechs, this idea of establishing a splitting, basically liquidating the state of Czechoslovakia and taking Bohemia and Moravia into many different independent GAUs. You can't look at the meeting between President Hacha and Adolf Hitler and the Czech and German delegations and put it in proper perspective without looking at the diplomatic activity that began in August of 1938, the fact that Benes himself had proposed subdividing Bohemia and Moravia into GAUs, basically German districts. So that was already on the table. And you have this dialogue back and forth. Hacha was an old man. He did collapse. He was given a glucose injection. That's not as a result of him being bullied and yelled at and screamed and intimidated. He was an old man, and the Germans gave him medical aid, for Pete's sake. I've had family members that have had to give him, you know, an injection, you know, or shove a Hershey bar in their mouth when they, you know, when their sugar has gone out of whack. So there is no indication. The only person that says that Hacha was intimidated and bullied and was threatened and cajoled is Richard Evans. And he doesn't really cite any concrete sources. And we can't ask President Hacha because he was locked up by the communists, who he was trying to keep in check. And I think, yeah, the Czech was trying to keep the communists in check. But let's keep this in mind. Hacha's was was inherently anti-communist. Hakka was a jurist. He was a legal person. He was a thinker. He was not some senile old man that he's been made out to be. And his objective was to do two things. He was tired of the diplomatic chess game. He definitely did not want to see his country go communist. That was completely contrary. There would have been a civil war in Czechoslovakia had it gone communist. And the option, which had already been placed on the table by Beneš, which again, you know, you cite, Hitler's promise, was under a protectorate situation. The Czech people would enjoy security. They would enjoy independence. They would enjoy, enjoy their national identity. That was the promise that was made, and that is verified by even some of the minor staff members that were in that meeting. Hitler made that promise. Hakka accepted it. Hakka accepted it and invited basically the establishment of a German protectorate with basically Czech sovereignty, you know, Czech identity, of Bohemia and Moravia. And that occurred in March of 1939. Mm-hmm. Which takes
us back to the film or the video audio that we listened to. And that was what they had in mind, was to build up the country.
Exactly correct. You're absolutely correct. There was no feeling in Czechoslovakia that they were being invaded. And there's some other videos which I'll post as well. The French media covered this transition. The British did not object. The French certainly did not object, because the French media was covering this dynamic. The French media was talking about self-determination, and that, you know, it was better off to be Czech under German influence, much like the British policy at Halifax and Chamberlain talking about, than to have it go communist. They were also talking about that Slovakia would be its own country and receive their self-determination. All of that was laid on the table. So what came out of this meeting at Berchtesgaden was that President Hakka asked for the establishment of the German protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia, which had been placed on the table. Hitler promised Czech sovereignty and national identity in that protectorate, which they did. There is nothing to disprove that the Czechs they were never bullied. They were never functioned as an occupied nation. Quite the contrary, they actually interacted very well with the German Germans. The Škoda factory we talked about, they began producing German armaments. They contributed significantly. In fact, there's a famous newsreel after Heydrich replaced von Neurath, the ex-foreign minister, as the Reich's protector. They were producing, hospital trains to fight against the Soviets. I use that as an example because that is one of the few incidences where you actually see Hakka and Heydrich together, and you can see the relationship. It wasn't one of where Hakka was terrified to be around Heydrich. It was one of mutual cooperation in the war effort. Now, you had the Germans enter, and there's newsreels. The French, as I said, the French covered the establishment of the protectorate, and there is a 1939 newsreel. And I have that as well, which I'll post up, the French media cover, you can hear the French narrator talking about the German entry through the various towns, which Hitler drove right into Prague. He went right into Prague, and he proclaimed the protectorate himself. You don't remember when he invaded other countries. I think he only made one trip. He did go to Paris after the armistice. Mm-hmm. He didn't go to Warsaw, but it was a totally different setting.
And, of course, he went to Austria, too.
That's absolutely correct, because Austria was German. But if you look at how Hitler is received and the Germans are received by the Czechs, it is not one as occupiers or invaders.
Exactly. All righty, we are going to a break. We'll be right back.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology, all while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Do you love America? Do you support the right to bear arms? Do you have an opinion on the current immigration issue? Do you believe in the dollar? You have a voice. You have an opinion. Let it be heard. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com right now and make your voice count. Do you like your rights taken away for the so-called sake of public safety? Do you want to repeal Obamacare? Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today and fight back. All you have to do is fill out a short survey and you're done. Simple, easy, fast. For your time, you get entered to win free gold and silver. That's right. Get gold and silver free by filling out this short survey that enters you to win. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today. That's AmericanFreedomSurvey.com.
For many years, coffee lovers have learned that for the freshest coffee, you need to roast your own beans. Unfortunately, that usually meant paying more per pound for coffee than you could get it at the local grocery. Those wanting to store rich coffee for long-term use have been frustrated with the lack of quality coffee available with a long shelf life. So we usually settle for brand name coffee, either ground or instant. But now we have another solution. Canned green coffee beans. Green coffee beans have not been roasted. And since the bean is not cracked yet, the shelf life is many years longer than roasted or ground coffee. Due to the way it's packed, you can expect these to stay fresh for 20 plus years. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order your canned green coffee beans. A single can is only $11.94. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. CampingSurvival.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations. That website is wvfoundations.org. So do you want to talk a little bit more about Heydrich?
Well, yeah, I wanted to just follow up and make a clear point. Hitler's actual statement to Hacke was that under that proposal, which had already been put on the table by Benesch, Czechoslovakia would enjoy a generous life with her own autonomy and a degree of national freedom, which it did. There were post-war maps of the German files of how what the Germans' plans were, and we talked about what their plans were in the post-war world. And there was never a plan for the Germans to annex Bohemia and Moravia. And all of those post-war maps where they were looking at what Europe would look like after the conquest of the Soviet Union and if they won the war, Bohemia and Moravia always remained a protectorate with these promises and guarantees that that Hitler made at Berchtesgaden. Now, you know, you have this situation, it's established, and immediately Benesch is gone. You know, he's already taken off to, he went to Chicago first and he settled back in London. But almost immediately these red opposition groups began their chicanery. They began this resistance, and it began to get out of hand because it began to affect the delivery of war materials produced in the Czech factories to the German military for use on the front. I mean, they were really this imported opposition. They were the British would routinely parachute in supplies and guns, and of course we knew that the assassins of Heydrich were not even, you know, they were from London. So originally the Reichsprotector, the governor that was represented Germany in Prague to the Czech government, was the former foreign minister von Neurath, who had been replaced by Ribbentrop. Von Neurath did not really respond to those to that Czech we call the Czech opposition. I call it the communist insurgency. He just really he was old. He just wasn't, you know, he was a foreign service member. So he was retired on health reasons, and Heydrich was made deputy. Von Neurath was really never declared not the protectorate, but Heydrich stepped in as a deputy protectorate, and he instituted several things. First of all, he invested heavily in projects in Czechoslovakia, job creation, developing the protectorate, and that has gone unwritten by a lot of court historians. He improved relations directly, you know, with the Czech citizenry that was definitely had no desire to have hostile interactions with Germany. They were definitely anti-communist. They were anti-Benesch, and they were appalled by these terrorist acts by the communists, and the fact that the British kept using Czechoslovakia as a launching pad to harass German war efforts, i.e., you know, flying in and parachuting in resistance members. A lot of the Czech resistance members, you know, a significant number of them were flown in by Czech expatriates out of London. Right. So Heydrich significantly improved relations with the Czechs. He also systematically, he was ruthless in attacking terrorists that were shooting Germans, that were actually even shooting Czechs. You know, keep in mind London and the communists engaged in very Orwellian language. The Czechs had asked for integration, this relationship with Germany, but yet, you know, President Hacha and the average Czech who, you know, supported it were deemed collaborators, and they still are deemed collaborators. But Heydrich rooted that out. He had suppressed and had rendered that opposition movement. He had suppressed it militarily, but he also, with the efforts such as the highway project we talked about and other efforts within the Czech, he had also deprived it of public support. A lot of Czechs began to say, you know, what are we opposed to? What are we being asked to oppose? Things are getting significantly better as a protectorate. We're not a pawn in geopolitical games anymore, and we definitely know that under the Germans we're not going to go communist. So he had significantly eroded public support, any sort of public support for that resistance. That is memorialized in documents that both the Czechoslovakian book, which I have online, I've not been able to find a hard copy, but I will make it available. I'll post it. I'll even send you one, Deanna. That did not go unnoticed in Britain. There was reports in Britain between, say, the Foreign Office, which was kind of the handler of Benesch, and the so-called Czech government in exile. It's kind of funny that Benesch officially resigned, and then he declared himself president in London of Czechoslovakia.
Right.
That's what he did. There was this chatter, these memorandums saying that they were concerned that Bohemia and Moravia, the Czechs, had become got quite comfortable in that situation, and they couldn't have it. They needed to disrupt that, and they were very concerned. As a matter of fact, Heydrich was leaving. There wasn't any need for Heydrich to be in Czechoslovakia anymore. Czechoslovakia was operating independently as a protectorate. He was being transferred to France when he died, when he was murdered. It's kind of interesting. You know, they parachuted in these assassins. They told these Czechs that they were doing this for national reasons and blah blah, a bunch of lies. they assassinate Heydrich. He wasn't even going to be in Czechoslovakia the following month. He was being transferred to France, where he probably would have been. And I submit to you that the reason why they really assassinated, had the Czechs assassinate Heydrich, was they did not want him to be as successful in his multifaceted approach in France as he was in Bohemia and Moravia.
Right. It would have been more transparent if he'd been in France, and the media would have picked it up more, I think. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. But so what they did was they made this whole thing. They created this false, this absolute false story of Czechs, you know, going back in and taking out the monster Heydrich. When right. quite the opposite, the only person he was a monster to was the communists and the terrorists. The average Czechs were doing very well, and he was being transferred out. He was leaving Czechoslovakia. He was being transferred to Paris, and he was going to employ the same tactics of basically identifying and targeting the real terrorists, while at the same time, reaching out to the population. And we know now that the French population really wasn't as anti-German as has been made out to be by the court historian. So I venture to say that Heydrich would have been probably more successful in France than he had been in Bohemia and Moravia, because he had an active, organized communist movement that he had to deal with when he arrived in Prague that really wasn't prevalent in France.
Right.
So you have this situation where it's obvious that the court historian's account of this rape of Czechoslovakia is absolutely bogus. It's artificial. And just recently, I know we only have a few minutes left, there was a very prominent Czech author. And his last name was Beers, B-E-R, like to drink beers. And he actually published, he came to the same conclusion that we're talking about today, Deanna. In Czech Republic, he published a book called The Hitler Project. And the book was a series of speeches. And basically he took the impression, he looked at the statements that were made, the diplomatic statements that were made, Hitler statements as to Czech, as to Czechs, the promises that were made to Hacha and at Berchtesgaden, and he said basically the conventional story between Czechoslovakia and Germany is false. He published this book, and the World Jewish Congress or the Central Council of Jews in Europe brought charges against him in Prague, ordered the book be removed, and all it was a book of speeches with a preface by him saying, a review of the evidence from the Czech side and the German side reveals that the court historian statement of events is not accurate, that there was a much closer relationship and a common relationship between the Germans and the Czechs. Did the Czechs engage in horrific crimes against ethnic Germans after the war? Yes, they did, but that was basically the communist partisans unleashed on the ethnic Germans by the Soviets, and it went unchecked by the British and the Americans as well. They let it happen. There are statements by Czechs who are in the United States to this day that will talk about the good relations they had with Czechs, and that the brutal atrocities that were committed by these partisans, these communist partisans. People can go to my oral histories page and listen to the oral history of Gretel Heinz, who lived in the Sudetenland, who attested to the fact that, you know, they really didn't even have a lot of trouble with the Soviet troops initially. It was the organized Czech communists, Benešov's people, that came afterward, and that nobody stopped them.
Right. Well, the partisans were terrible, and a lot of them were Jewish.
Absolutely. They were led by Jewish commissars.
Right. Well, thank you so very much for being on the program today, Rodney. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the time again, Deanna.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye. Talk with you tomorrow.